Well, thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show. All the information on our show can be found at milehighshow.com. We post each and every Monday. You can subscribe and download at Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. And also, there's an embedded player on our website at milehighshow.com where you can listen to current and past shows. Today, episode number 44. We recorded at Brick and Bones Moonshine Bar and Bistro on Prescott's Whiskey Row with a local comedian, Adam Harden. Sat down with him just before he took the stage for the Comedy in the Loft event, a monthly show that is put on at Brick and Bones upstairs, hosted by Mellow B Entertainment, Bobby Johnson, and comedian Day-Day, Day Adam Peace, who is a Phoenix-based comedian, brings a show up once a month to Prescott, and Adam participates in that as much as he can. So we sat down, learned a little bit about Adam, and I hope you enjoy the show. Again, please check out milehighshow.com and especially our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram feeds. We often will announce where we will be recording because most of our shows are recorded on location and open to the public. So come on down, join in the conversation if you will, if you would like to. Sit back and observe if you'd like. Over the past 10 months or so, we have sat down with some of the greatest entertainers, some of the most talented folks in and around the Prescott area and also a few down in the Phoenix area. So we encourage you, come on out. It's a lot of fun. Our sponsors often will have little bonuses and little prizes we can give out and some drink specials and some food specials and things. We do record mostly at bars, restaurants, coffee shops, and the like in and around Prescott. So follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook so you can join in on the fun. This week with Adam, we were, like I said, at Brick and Bones. They're a good friend of ours, a good friend of the show. So head on over there at 214 South Montezuma, right on Whiskey Row in Prescott, Arizona, and let them know the Mile High Show sent you. We're coming up on our one-year anniversary this December, and we are planning. There's a little bit about it at the very end of the show. Adam and I are talking. It is a storyteller show that we are putting on. We'll be recording that somewhere down on Prescott's Whiskey Row. We're firming up where that will be and the date and time. What it's going to consist of is half a dozen or so storytellers, those of you out in the audience in the area who have a good story to tell. We'll be recording that in front of a live audience, and we'll have some musical accompaniment. We've got a couple of musicians that are going to sit in, play a song or two. So it'll be a very interactive show. Info on that will be on our Facebook page under Mile High Show and, of course, at milehighshow.com. If you have a story you would like to tell in front of an audience, we are asking for it to be right around 5 minutes, so the five-minute mark. If you go a little under, you go a little over, not a big deal, but that's kind of our target. The theme of the night will be the most interesting character you have ever met. It's somebody who has shaped how you look at things, how you have come to some of the decisions you have come to, and what has made you the person you are. Again, the most interesting person you have met. We've had a couple of questions. We've had some submissions, so thank you for that. We are not necessarily looking for brush-ups with famous people. interactions with notable folks. That's not specifically what we're looking for. We're looking for stories about people who have influenced you, whether that be good or bad. Sometimes we learn from some really down and dirty folks. We learn what not to do. And others, we are inspired by how they have lived their lives and how they treat us, whether that be a doctor, a family member, a teacher, a boss, a childhood friend. We're looking for stories of people who have influenced your life, whether that be for the good or the bad. If you would like to participate in that, send us an email outlining the gist of your story. We will be selecting, like I said, about 6 to 8 folks to take the mic, and you can submit those summaries right through the contact page at milehighshow.com, or send us an email at milehigh, and that's spelled H-I-M-I-L-E-H-I show at gmail.com. Milehigh with an H-I show at gmail.com, or just go to milehighshow.com and hit the contact page. Now, our website is milehighshow, spelled H-I-G-H. So we've got that little confusion for you. But if you're listening to this, most likely you know how to reach us. So let's get on with episode number 44 with Prescott-based comedian Adam Hardin, recorded at Brick and Bones Moonshine Bar and Bistro. We hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, uh-huh.
That's beautiful.
I never done this before, so.
Neither have I.
Yeah.
I do, but nobody listens. So what you're getting up, do you know where in the spot you're coming? Or it is
certain.
Do they give you the list when they show up and start seeing who's coming in? Or
I think you had a list. I think you had a list tonight.
Dun, dun, dun. So is that the
show lineup right there?
Okay. I can't see. I'm blind.
Cedric, Jake, Adam, David, James.
Oh, cool. So you'll be number 3? 7 minutes? 10 minutes?
7 minutes.
Cool. Is this the magic book?
It just helps me remember. I gotta write down.
Yeah. Hey, so how many times have you been up? Have you been keeping track?
Are we recording now?
Yeah, we've been recording.
Yeah. I didn't even know we were live.
we're low key, man.
I want to say this is maybe number 12,
really?
Something like that. Not
you've
very
been
many.
You've been doing some stuff down the valley too, huh?
Yeah, I'm trying to get down like once a month. I don't know. It's a little bit difficult coming from here, drive 100 miles to do 5-10 minutes.
To do 5 minutes and you're not making that big paycheck yet on the comedy?
No, I think people want to pay me to not do it.
All right, so I was here the first night. At least they announced it as the first time you were ever behind a mic for comedy anyway.
Right.
How long had you been preparing to do that, or was that kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing? That was here at Brick and Bones several months ago.
It was in February. I want to say it's about a month that I knew. I had asked a guy that's performing tonight, David Rodriguez, hey, how can I do this? He said, hey, talk to Bobby Johnson, your local. He'll probably give you a few minutes. Talk to Bobby, and he said, yeah, I'll give you 3 to 5 minutes. And was able to get up. I don't know if it was the next time or a month later, but, yeah.
Had you been tossing it around your head for a while?
I got a friend named Nate that kind of for last, I don't know, a couple years, like, hey, you should try that, whatever.
Just encouraging you?
Knowing how
things were working through your head?
We just kind of go back and forth, just conversations and stuff, and he just mentioned about trying it, and I didn't know anyway. I didn't know even how to start, where to look, and just happened upon Brick and Bones for comedy night one night.
Now, we had talked a couple times before, just in passing, that one night after the Elks when we went out. And correct me if I'm wrong, you weren't like really a comedy nerd, you know, you weren't really into comedy growing up, or were you?
No, I mean, I watched TV shows like Saturday Night Live and Living Color, a lot of sitcoms.
Was it something that you wanted to do as a kid, or did it even cross your mind, or did it?
I don't know. I was just wondering whether I was going to buy my food off the food truck or from the cafeteria that day. I didn't think about it. Just kind of happened upon it.
Because you have a very unique look at things. I mean, you definitely have a voice, and it's odd because I've been around. I was a comedy nerd growing up. I loved stand up. I used to comb through at the thrift stores the old comedy albums. You know, anything from Bill Cosby, Jonathan Winters. You know, I remember getting a Red Fox album for like 50 cents at the thrift store. And my mom let me, I was like 10, and my mom let me get it because, you know, hey, we watch Sanford and Son, so how bad could he be? Oh yeah, that's Fred Sanford. Yeah. Nothing. Why, if you know anything about Red Fox's stand-up, it's definitely not TV.
Yeah, I think I watched a lot of shows as a kid, Mork and Mindy, yeah. Sanford and Son. You know, my brother and I were latchkey kids and watched a lot of TV, and yeah. I think that the life that we lived as kids lended ourselves to seeing the funny in things.
Now, you were down in Southern Cal growing up?
Yeah, I was born in Downey, California, which is LA County.
Yeah.
Went to school all around there, Bellflower, Paramount, Norwalk, Santa Fe Springs, Downey.
What was the neighborhoods like down there?
The neighborhoods when I was a kid, I want to say,
up in Downey, California.
I don't think that I looked at it that way. I just looked at it as I was just a kid. We rode our bikes to school. Really didn't get in too much trouble or any issues.
Pretty racially mixed area? Or?
I would say it was really mixed, looking back over some yearbooks and stuff like that. But at the time, didn't think about it like that. It was just, this is what my life is. And
kids,
you just get along with people. And, you know, we moved around a lot, my brother and I.
Just you and your brother? It's the only sibling you have?
Yeah, just my brother. And throughout school, I went to 12 different schools through senior of high school. So we moved around quite a bit.
Like one a year, huh? What's the longest you stayed in one spot?
The longest I ever was in one school was just over 2 years.
Man. What were we moving for? Was it economic reasons? Jobs drying up and things, or...?
That's a good question. My mom would have to be here to answer that question.
Did I meet your mom at the Elks?
I think you did.
Yeah,
I think
she was
there,
right?
For that show.
And then at the end when we were all talking by the stage?
She was there. But she would tell a different story about what things happened because she likes to exaggerate like moms do.
But it's a sit down with Adam, though. What was Adam, 10-year-old Adam, what was your take on bouncing around?
10-year-old Adam?
High school Adam. Anyway.
10-year-old Adam just wanted to play soccer.
Yeah.
11-year-old Adam wanted to play baseball. All through those years, I loved to play basketball.
How hard was it for you popping around? Were you able to? I mean, were you staying at least close? Did you have some friends that carried over, or was it starting fresh every year?
No, I don't think there was any real friends that carried over. I think we were within 5 to 7 miles each time we moved.
That's a trek when you're a kid. You know, That might as well be three cities over.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a big adjustment, big change. I think that's why I'm adept at making friends wherever I go, because that's what I had to do, get to a new school and just make friends and do what I had to do.
What did that do with your relationship with your brother? Did it strengthen you guys up? Were you a lot tighter because of that? I mean, that was the one constant, was your brother and your mom, huh?
Yeah, but I think, no, my brother and I aren't close.
Really?
I think that we had our own issues. My mom kind of separated us and did things with my brother and then did things with me. And rarely did we do a bunch of things together.
Who's older?
I'm older.
You're
by
older?
A year and a half and a day.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. You'd think that, just on the outsider looking in, you'd think that since that was the constant, that would have solidified that. I'm not real close to either of my brother. I got two brothers, two sisters.
Right, but I don't know if I was the best brother around. I mean, I was kind of a jerk at times.
Yeah.
And
I think older brothers have to be. I know my two were. I'm the youngest of
and
five.
I can't look at that as to why. I don't really want to psychoanalyze it. I don't know why we acted like that or what we did.
It's
but
okay.
Bring me another drink, Matt. I'll lay down wherever you want me to.
It might take a little. I might have to start drinking for that to happen. So what? Boy, that's rough, man. I switched schools once. In second grade, and I went from a school on one side of the town to the one right up the street, lived in the same house my entire childhood. My brother still lives there. It's a family house. But I had, I don't know. I don't like change now as an adult. I don't know how I would have handled it when I was a kid. I probably wouldn't. Who knows? Kids bounce, I guess, bounce back.
Well, I guess I think for me, like, that's how I can pick up and move cross country or what have you, which I moved my family a couple different times,
yeah,
almost on a whim. And it just felt like another adventure. It's just people. It's just a new thing to do. I'll make this work. No big deal. I'll be 40 this year, and I feel like I'm just getting started.
Yeah. So what did you get into as a kid? Were you see some trouble? Were you a troublemaker? Or did you just kind of try and keep your head down and get on with things?
I think I like to roll the punches. I was arrested at 11 years old for the first time. 11 years old for graffitiing a building.
What did they do? What's an arrest for an 11-year-old like? What are they?
The rest for an 11-year-old is like you hear the sirens and you run and jump on your skateboard and you get about 15 feet and all of a sudden there's four cop cars there and you are sitting on the curb. That's how it's like.
Did they take you to the station? Did they take you to home? What did they do?
They took us to the station. There was myself, I was 11, another kid was 12, and another kid was 15. And we all got arrested for graffiti, spray painting on the back of a building on the railroad tracks in Santa Fe Springs. And my parents came to pick me up, or my mom came to pick me up, stepdad, boyfriend, I can't remember. And it was, I didn't think it was that big of a deal.
What did it? Did they give you the whole, this will be on your permanent record type speech, or?
I can't even remember.
It's what been was mom's reaction?
20-something years ago. I don't remember. I'm sure she would tell you again if she was here. But it's just a life experience. It's just not something that I would say that I would do again.
Yeah.
Or that my kids ever experience, but it is what it is.
Now, you have kids now?
Yeah, I have three kids.
How old are
they? My oldest daughter is 19. She goes to Grand Canyon University. My son is 17, is a senior at Bradshaw. And my youngest daughter is 15 and is a sophomore at Bradshaw.
Oh, my goodness. I got a 5-6-year-old at home, and that's kicking my butt. I could not handle a teenager. I'll most likely be dead by the time he's a teenager, so I'm safe there. And I don't know how guys raise daughters. I didn't understand females when I was a kid. I didn't understand them in high school. I didn't understand them. I don't even understand them now. It's a complete mystery to me what goes on between a female's head, ears in their head.
You're not asking the right guy about that question.
I don't know how.
I think that being married at 19 and having my first daughter right before my ex-wife and I turned 21.
Oh, my goodness.
We were strict. We raised our kids without television in the home for all those years. Their grandmother was a kindergarten teacher in the Prescott Unified School District
now,
for 35 years.
You raised them in this area?
Born at YRMC in Prescott.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm. And we moved a few times, but landed back in Prescott, I want to say, in 2008 or so, about February 2008.
Now you say you're pretty strict with them. You had a pretty rigid routine. Was that religious based at the time? Because I know you have a religious background.
Yeah, I met my ex-wife in church, and raised our kids in a Christian household.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very strict. We went to church every Sunday, every Wednesday.
You were pretty active in the church, though. You were doing...
Very active in the church.
You were preaching for a while, right?
Yeah, in 2004, I was ordained minister through Christian Fellowship Ministries, which locally is known as the Potter's House.
Yeah. A worldwide organization, pretty much, right?
In some 100-something countries around the world, there's, I don't know, some close to 2,000 churches, with the first and original mother church being here in Prescott.
Really? I didn't know it was based out here.
Yep, 1970. Oh, wow. The pastor, who's still the pastor today, came here with his family and took over Foursquare Church in 1985, became the Potter's House. So, yeah, I became involved with that. Actually, what's funny is that the day that I was, quote, born again was 23 years ago today, October 17th, 1993.
Now, you still active with them?
No, I haven't been a part of that church for 4 years. Do you think I do my comedy because? You've heard some of the stuff I've said, Matt. I wouldn't think that the church would be really into what I'm saying.
Was it just separated out? Was there anything specific that said, you know what, I'm done?
Not at the beginning. I don't think that I looked at it that way. But as the years went by, I began to see some things that were kind of disturbing, and
just in religion in general, or specific to the area, or was it specific people, or
that's a loaded question. I don't know if I have really sat back and watched it and looked at it and analyzed it too much. I've just kind of walked away from the church.
Just wasn't for
right
you.
It was during my divorce, and gotcha. A lot of things were going on in my life personally. And I didn't know how to deal with things, and I kind of just walked away from church and things that I had known, which I'd been there since just prior to my 18th birthday. And at 35, I found myself in the middle of a separation, coming home to a house with no wife and children, and really no direction, I guess.
Yeah. And what were you, as an active ordained minister, were you preaching in front of the large groups, smaller groups? Was it like youth ministry? What did you do?
Well, at that time I was back in what would be the home church here in Prescott, but I had pioneered or started two churches, one in Kingman, Arizona, which is still functioning as the Potter's House. And another one in Klamath Falls, Oregon, I had started.
Beautiful country up there.
Not too bad. And I'd come back, and I was involved in... At one time, I was a youth pastor. One time, I was a drama leader.
A microphone in a crowd is not... It's no stranger to you.
No, not at all. Being in front of people and talking about things is not new to me. It's not foreign. It's not hard to do. But at the same time, doing stand-up comedy is so much different than preaching and having a sermon of notes standing in front of you on a lectern.
Did you work your personal experiences and life into your sermons, or did you stick to manuscripts, or how much freedom did you have I don't want to say improv, but I mean, was it life experience stuff you were talking about, or was it?
I would feel, prompted or led to certain scriptures, or I would read my Bible and want to do a sermon on a certain subject. And generally, my sermons were 35 to 45 minutes, no longer than that. And they were all typed out, three point sermon. And
you work any humor into that?
Yeah, I'll try to just be myself. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to, and that's the thing with stand up as well, as I'm not trying to create a persona or be somebody that I'm not. But I'm just trying to be myself. And, like the guy that's actually headlining tonight, Jeff Picaretta, the first night that I did stand-up here at Brick and Bones, I talked to him out back, and he gave me some good advice, I think. And he said, you know what? Do what you think is funny. Don't try to be somebody else other than yourself.
Don't create a character.
Yeah, and I feel like that's just I'm in the beginning stages. It's not as though I feel like I've come of age. I'm just having a good time. I'm having fun. I just totally bombed on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm getting up again tonight. I'm having a good time. I like doing it. I know I'm going to get better. I'm just going to keep working at it.
I can't. Like I said, I was kind of a comedy nerd growing up. I love stand up and that, you know, very generic stand up. I remember, you know, the Merv Griffin, Mike Douglas afternoon talk shows. On a treat, we'd get to stay up and watch Johnny Carson with my dad. He worked nights, so you know. And I remember as what was I 10? 9 or 10 when Saturday Night Live premiered, and I remember watching it. We got to stay up and watch it on occasion, or we'd stay at somebody's house, a friend's house, overnight, and we'd sneak down and watch it. I love comedy, but in the boom, when I was, you know, late teens, early 20s, you know, kind of growing into adulthood in the San Francisco Bay Area is where I was from, and that was the huge comedy boom. There was comedy clubs at every bar, every restaurant. There was six nights of comedy around my little neighborhood, you know, my little area. At that time, comedy was, I mean, if you want to pick a hack comedian, you know, you're casting a show, you could go right back there. You know, the sport coat with the collar turned up, the sleeves rolled up, you know, really, really kind of cheesy, but there were some really great, great ones that stood out. I mean, I got to see Robin Williams on occasion. Bobby Slayton, who's down in Phoenix, I believe this weekend, was a guy that we used to see quite a bit. So out of the big, huge mess of everybody and their mother doing stand-up in the San Francisco Bay Area, there was some really great, great comics to watch. And one of the things that is really hacky is when people don't have their voice, or on open mic nights or smaller venues like this, where you could see it's people just stretching their muscles and learning the trade and learning the craft. What blew me away watching you the first time, and I don't know if maybe it was because you were brand new and you hadn't done it before, you were raw. You were just out there talking. It didn't look stiff. It didn't look like you were struggling through anything. It looked like you almost had your voice already. You were just kind of stretching out some muscles on the bits. And it was, I didn't think it was your first time. It's like, that's ain't his first time, man.
Right. Well, I appreciate that. I feel like comedy, there's such a huge learning curve that to find your niche and your voice, you just have to keep doing it. You have to find what works. You have to tweak your jokes.
Yeah.
Get up as much as you can and begin to press kit. That's really hard to do. And traveling to Phoenix, you know, easily I drop $50 every time I go to Phoenix. And
at
just
least,
to do
just
five, seven, 10 minutes, 10 minutes. And not that I don't like doing that, but at the same time, it's really it's difficult. Right now, it's kind of more of a hobby than something that I'm pursuing. I mean, I am continuing to get up into mics and tell my jokes, and I like it when there's a crowd. Like Tuesday night, it was typically...
Where were you at Tuesday?
Tuesday night, we're at the Hideaway West in Glendale.
Was that a Bobby Johnson show?
No, that was Gary Brockway and Adam Garza. But at the same time, most of the crowd, 90%, was all comics. And so a lot of them, you know, I understand, like, you're nervous, you want to get up, you're looking over your material. Like, anything that you're involved in, people that are involved in it are the worst critics. If you're a carpenter, carpenters are going to come to a house, look at this, and go, it's a little bit of shoddy work. Tile guys, this and that. Guys that do granite, it doesn't matter. Comics are the same way. They come in, they critique things, and, you know, but I'm not there to impress comics. I'm there to talk to people that like comedy, the regular average Joes.
And flex those muscles, too. Just get the habit.
Yeah, and just get out there and say what I want to say. And see what works, see what doesn't. Try a few new jokes. And the issue is that there's nowhere in Prescott for me to try brand new jokes. So I'm trying brand new jokes that Phoenix comedians and comedians that are all over the country have tried in open mics and have refined and have done this, that over and over and over. And here I am. I'm trying it for the first time. I don't know how it's going to work. May bomb, it may do good, whatever.
Does it, when you get a chance to be here in at Brick and Bones and like at the Elks, it was a small audience, but it was a friendly audience. There was some, there was a lot of folks that knew people. Does it help you to be in front of people you know, or does that get in your head a little bit and hinder you a little?
I don't know if that matters or not to me. I will say that I had done stand-up maybe two or three times, and I performed at the Tempe Improv. And the stage was
one of those new faces nights?
New faces of comedy. And I was first up after the host, Matt Storrs, and he's really funny. He'd been doing it a long time, runs his own shows. And the stage was up high. It was dark, so I didn't see the whole crowd. There was probably 200, 250 people. And I got a good reaction. People were laughing, and so it was a really big confidence boost for me.
Cool.
And the thing is, I think that just not having unrealistic expectations like, hey, next week, Comedy Central or HBO is going to call me. Like my son said to me one time, he said, hey, Dad, you know, what is your dream? Is the dream to be on HBO, have your own HBO comedy special in time? And I said, no. My dream is to be able to pay my bills on time before disconnect notice comes. That's the truth right there.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to pause that just for a second. Lots of messages.
Yeah. My friend is like the one that tried to call.
So I, like I said, you know, in talking with different comics and stuff, kind of a...
Are we recording again?
Yeah, yeah. There's no structure to this, man. You got to have people listening to have structure. Kind of a rule of thumb is like 10 years to just find your voice type of thing. 20 years before you really start.
You're really discouraging me here, Matt.
No. Well, that's what I'm saying. So it's because a lot of people do have that. You know, I've talked to folks, you know, in different clubs and stuff, and people have reached out to me for interviews and things. Where it's like, yeah, I'm a comedian. I've been doing it for 6 months. Well, no, you're an accountant who goes and does open mic or whatever you're doing. There are a few folks, Joel Cooper, who kind of stumbled into it and had some really big breaks right off the bat. But that is definitely the exception to the rule. And he's still, he'd be the first to admit he's still clicking around and trying to find gigs and doing what he can, staying as active as he can. But what I was getting to with that whole long spiel was you, especially at the Elks, I was sitting there watching you, and that's not a bar show. That's a theater show. And even though, and I don't know, what could you see from the stage? Could you see, did you get any glimpse of the crowd at all, or was it just plain dark? It was hard to tell from where I was at.
No, I think I saw some of the crowd as they were filtering in. They were a little bit older crowd. And so I try to gauge the crowd as they come in and try and throw some impromptu jokes in there as I see the crowd. And that night was no different than any other. I made two or three jokes that I only used there and have never used again.
You had a very strong set there. I was really impressed. And again, it was just watching your cadence and how you were talking and stuff. Because I've seen, and I'll say this and then confess to why I'm saying it. I have seen folks who have been doing stand-up for like months, less than a year, and it shows the nervousness in the voice, the hesitation to go off script. And I say that because would you say you're 40?
Be 40 in next month.
So when you were a little kid riding your skateboard, running around in 86, 87. I was doing a lot of work for comics in the Bay Area, headshots and things. Photography was my business back then, and partying hard with some of these guys. This is the boom, like I said, the boom and the comedy boom in the Bay Area. the party boom, the dope boom, everything. We were just running wild. And we'd sit, we'd go, one guy, he's, I don't know if I can say who it is, he's a writer now. He does a lot of writing for TV and stuff. He was a headliner in the Bay Area. Like, there were so many of them working back then, but he was making the rounds in the Bay Area. And supplementing income, he would host these open mics and run these open mic shows at different bars. So I'd go hang out with him, and we'd party. We'd just party like animals. And in, you know, in between sets, we're sitting in the back just clowning on the guys that are on the stage, and he kept telling me, you go up there. You got to go up there. You got to do this. Well, months of him telling me that, one night I was drunk enough, I decided to go up and do it. There was probably 10 people on the list, not a huge night. Everybody's doing 3 or 4, 5 minutes was a stretch. The prize was $50 for the person that won the opener. They did a little judging of it. Well, I win it. And the prize was $50, but it wasn't cash. It was these little, like little raffle tickets that they would, you do the little raffle things like the high school and stuff. They were drink tickets, and you get 20 of them.
Yeah, buddy.
And they were dated, so you had to use them that night. Now, the show's over at 11. Their idea was you pass them out. You use a few, and then you pass them out. And then it encouraged people, hey, I was there last night. I got some free drinks. I'm going back next week. Or maybe I'll get some. Uh-uh, I earned that. So we sat there, and I drank them all in about an hour and a half. Went back the next week, did it again. For about 3 months, I was doing this like once a week. And having a ball. And I, in my head, I was convinced I'm killing. I'm ready to, I'm going to start doing. And then just didn't do it anymore. And recently, fairly recent, I found a couple little micro cassettes. I was cleaning out some boxes, and they were some recordings of these gigs, quote unquote gigs I did. It was the worst, the absolute worst stand-up comedy ever that you could, if you can't even call it that. It was the worst drunk guy talking into a microphone that you have ever heard.
Tonight might be not much different from myself.
No, it was terrible.
Give me another drink, so, Matt.
I know bad comedy firsthand, but watching you, again, you've been doing this a matter of months. Watching you just dialogue, and like you said, you gauge the crowd, you watch them, you pulled some stuff that you hadn't done before, you haven't done since. That's not normal for a guy just starting out doing open mics. Most folks will have their set, and they won't stray from it until they've started flexing those muscles and learn it. So for you to be able to do that a couple months into it, it's impressive. Obviously, like anything else, whether it be as carpenter, mechanic, landscaper, it takes years to learn things, learn the tricks of the trade. But to be able to do that right off the bat, it's pretty impressive.
Right. And then here's the thing is that I am a landscaper,
that's
Matt.
Why.
And what that means is that I'm really good at the wheelbarrow position. And beyond that, it means that I didn't go to college. But probably most important to people of Arizona is that it means that I'm one of the few people taking jobs away from Mexicans. And so I stand behind my work. I do a good job. I've been doing it 20 years. People think I'm lying when I say that joke. That's true. I've been doing it since 1994.
Trump's poster child, man.
And my ex-wife was born in Nogales, Mexico. Speaks fluent Spanish.
Is that why it broke up? She was upset that you were taking jobs away from the country?
No, I think that, I don't know what it is. She fell in love with a fireman, hates my fireman joke. I won't even tell it tonight. It's kind of offensive.
I'm not sure, but was that like the first joke you said that night?
It was one of the first jokes
you
that I said
Jesus
that night. I did probably have a Jesus joke.
But that fireman joke.
Fireman joke. Let's not talk about it.
What's going
because
on, man?
It's not.
Are you doing it at all anymore? Do you do it? Down,
I did
down
do
down
it
down?
Just the other week, actually this past week, and maybe a month ago, and I felt like the guy that before me did a Columbine joke. And it was kind of dark, and I felt like it was okay. Like, he gave me the green light to tell my joke about my neighborhood. And so Yeah. I did it, and it's really not that bad if you think about
To preface it a little bit, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say the joke because, one, I would butcher it and not do it justice. And
number two, people would hate me and pick it against me like the Potter's house that I used to be part of. I don't need that anymore, Matt.
most of the people that listen to this show are local, so they'll know what I'm talking about. But there's quite a few that aren't. I get emails from folks all over the country. Both of them. I got two emails from across the country. But what, two and a half years ago?
Yes.
We had the worst on-duty firefighter tragedy in the country, probably the world, I don't know. And your joke centers around that. So it's kind of like, you know, back in, you know, 15 years ago, 14 years ago, when was it okay to start making 9/11 jokes? Well, for comedians, it was as they were watching the news, they were formulating, okay, what's the joke coming up?
And that was a process. And things. Absolutely, that was a joke that I told my friend days after it happened. And he cried laughing, but at the same time was like, that is so bad. But at the same time, It was bad, but it was funny. But it was relevant, and it's not in a disrespectful way. I actually knew one of the firefighters since he was probably 8 or 9 years old. Yeah. And to think that
I worked with several of those
through
guys.
A tragedy, people lose their sense of humor is kind of beyond me. Like, I don't understand what's acceptable and what's not. I'm not. It's not as though I'm trying to push an envelope or trying to be offensive. Like I said before, is that I'm just trying to say things that I think are kind of funny. Whether that's edgy or not, I'm not looking at it like that. I'm not a student in comedy. I don't know all. I've watched Eddie Murphy Raw and this and that, and watched some different comics here and there. But really, you know what? I didn't have a television from 1994 till 2004.
You didn't miss much. there wasn't much on
from 1994. Past that, let me back up. 1994 until 2011. 17, 18 years I didn't have a television. And so it's not as though I knew all that was going on and pop culture and this and that.
Do you think that helps you in formulating your look on things, your comedic look on things?
I think that being a part of a church and religion from 1993 until 2011 definitely formulated some of the opinions that I have and some of the jokes that I have, and being a strict Christian that never touched a drop of alcohol, didn't smoke a cigarette,
You're
wasn't around people.
It,
yeah, I'm trying to make up for it right now. Buy me another drink, Matt. Is definitely has my outlook has, I don't know, has been changed by that, I would say.
There's whole camps of comedy, whole genres of comedy that are, you know, just rooted in pop culture and in television references and Kardashian references, and you know, the whole YouTube generation is basically based on that. And it's almost, I mean, it's easy for me to say, not being a comedian, just an observer and a fan of comedy. Yeah, they laugh. You know, they make me laugh. There's certain things. But when you listen to a comic, when you watch a comic that is really drawn from personal experience and personal outlook on things and situations, as opposed to just cracking the joke based on the headlines, to me, as an observer, that's, I don't want to say a truer comedy, because the other stuff makes me laugh too. But it's just a little deeper. It's a little more personal. It makes me sit there and listen. Okay, what's this person going to say? What's this guy? What's this girl going to say? That keeps my attention, as opposed to being a pedestrian listener.
Like, I'm no Sam Kinison, okay? But I feel like when I get up on stage, people are going to judge you right away, regardless what you look like, what you sound like, that first joke you tell. And the thing is, I'm just having a good time. I'm not trying to be somebody that I'm not. I'm not trying to create a persona. I'm not trying to create a brand or go on YouTube or have my own t-shirts made or what have you. And that's not a bad thing. But at the same time, I'm not trying to promote myself in a way that's disingenuous. I'm just trying to be me. I'm having a good time. And at the end of the day, I got to go home by myself. Nobody's coming with me. And I can deal with
Let's
that.
Let's see if we can fix that tonight.
Right? I would like to fix that tonight. If there's a few drunken whores here tonight, which is what I usually go home with. Here's the thing is that I don't go home with a butterface. It's usually butter genital warts or butter five children. But more often than that, it's a butter husband. And the thing is, we can't let him know. So I got to create a fake profile for this woman to connect with.
Speaking of profiles, let's go into that a little bit, because you have had several on Facebook. I don't mean several profiles, but you've had several incarnations of Adam Harden on social media. You don't do Twitter, do you? You don't do Twitter?
I do have a Twitter account, but I really don't know how to use it. Like I said, I was not on media, didn't watch TV from 94 to 2011.
Twitter's going to be your you need to start doing that. You need to start getting into Twitter, because your Facebook posts are in reality Twitter posts.
I need 140
characters, what yours are.
And I'm good.
And they punch you right in the face. I was looking at them earlier today. But you have had a couple of different things go on Facebook. The one that's popping in my head was a few months back, you had some visits from some men in suits, if I'm not mistaken.
I did. I mean, it was not my best moment.
Oh, I thought it was funny. Go ahead.
As I see the Yavapai County Courthouse from here.
Right out the window.
I was in court, or I was waiting for my turn to talk to the judge. And I made a Facebook post saying that I was going to blow up the bathroom of the county courthouse, which meaning I was going to take a dump and crap in their toilet. And that's what I meant. Well, after I get out of court.
The phrase blow up and court should be in separate sentences.
My problem was that I tagged the courthouse. I wasn't thinking. I was like, here I am. Well, that was 10 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 NSA agents or whoever the hell they were showed up on my doorstep and wanted to search my premises for, quote, bomb-making materials.
And as a landscaper, how much fertilizer do you have?
And I don't have any fertilizer because it was not that time of year. They said, we don't care what you have in the house. You know, we just want to come in, make sure I want to talk to a supervisor. It doesn't matter if you have a pound of meth in the house. And I said, cool, because I sold 3 8 balls earlier in the day. Come on in.
Did you say that?
No, I didn't say that. But at the same time, I thought that.
That would not have surprised me.
It tripped me out. And they came inside and, you know, found that I did not have bomb-making materials. But at that point, I realized that Facebook is not real life, but it is real life at the same time.
But that was not your only foray into Facebook.
No, that's not true. I have been.
Run through some other examples. You've had one really recent.
Really recently.
Let's go chronologically.
My phone broke maybe 2 weeks ago. I got a new phone. Came on, transferred all my apps, opened Facebook, and it says I've been reported for violating community standards on nudity or some bullshit. Crap.
Yeah.
And here was somebody reported me for a Facebook post that I made, and it goes like this. I was banging this chick with cerebral palsy, and the best thing about it is that she always has the O face. Besides that, she doesn't have to turn her head to eat tacos. Now, here's the thing. It's completely made up. I never have banged a chick with cerebral palsy.
Well, but
everybody turns their head when they eat tacos. So I don't understand. And there was no nudity. There wasn't even a picture. It was a hashtag that said, it's the little things. Hashtag, that's what she said.
Oh, my goodness.
Why is that bad?
Do you find out who reported you?
Is that no, you can't find out. You no? can't find out. Apparently, I'm an internet bully.
But it happens. You've had some others.
I had another one where a guy was talking crap on the internet, and then I went to his page and took a picture of him and his wife, and I posted it on there, and I said, no, the one that you're married to. I took his picture.
You downloaded it.
I downloaded him, his
something
picture.
Something that he put up on the World Wide Web
it's a
already.
A picture of him and his wife, and I said, hey, guess what? Your wife looks like she could build a dam with those beaver teeth that she has. And that was it. And I got ixnayed off of Facebook. Something so like that. I've had a few drinks tonight, Matt.
How do you go about getting back on Facebook when something like that happens? You just gotta
take the beating.
But you gotta create another account?
Another time they did make me change my name to my actual name, and I did have to.
That's kind of common. I know some
people
folks have had to do that.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what happens when you're on the NSA watch list. That I did have to take a picture of my ID and upload it to Facebook to tell them that I am who I say I am.
So you've said you're
screw you, Mark Zuckerberg.
So you said you had a conversation with your son about where do you want to be? Do you want the hour special? Do you want to be on HBO? And right now you're worried about, like every one of us is worried about, making sure we got electricity when we get home, making sure we got a home that we can have electricity in. And
I'm worried that Donald Trump is not president because I need those Mexicans to work for me doing landscaping.
But where
they are hard workers, so they love America, and unless you're a felon, you should stay here.
Well, there's our political speech for the night. Now, where do you? Let's look beyond the bread and butter and roof over our head. Where do you want? Is comedy something you want to pursue in the long range, or is it something you're doing to keep your sanity and keep your sense of humor now?
No, it's something that I love doing right now, and I definitely see myself doing it for the rest of the days that I'm alive.
Cool.
I don't plan on quitting anytime soon. I'm having a great time. I think I'm getting better. I'm learning what it takes. And I feel like that I have a voice and I have things to say. And it's a whole lot of fun, I'll tell you that much.
Well, I have learned the hard way that my association with comedy is strictly as an observer. And I love observing you when you're up on stage, and I love checking out these comedy shows, both here and down the valley. I want to go down and check you out in the valley when you're down there, so I'll be following you on Facebook as long as I'm able to.
It's Adam Hardon with an I. H-A-R-D-I-N.
What is your Twitter feed that you
I have
use?
No idea
we'll try
what
and
it
find
is.
It. Now, before we cut off here, one, thanks for meeting with me. They're setting up chairs and stuff now. Day-Day and Bobby Johnson, we're going to have links to their
Day-Day,
stories.
What up?
But before we cut off, there is one thing. I've been doing this show. I've been doing radio in this area for about 2 years. I've been doing this podcast for just under a year. Our anniversary show is coming up in December. We're hammering out the location and the date. But what we're doing, and I want to extend this to anybody who's listening, but to Adam specifically right now, I don't know if you're familiar with The Moth, themoth.org. It's a storytelling organization. They're a lot of NPR stuff. But what they do, and they're a successful outfit, I am not. So I'm doing what entrepreneurs have been doing since the beginning of time. I'm stealing a great idea, and I'm going to use it myself. They have storytelling shows throughout the country, and then they group those people together as they get selected and win, I guess you'd say it. And then they record these podcasts and do live shows of storytelling events where they take a subject, a topic, a word, a theme, and just throw it at people. This is what you talk about. And they do it, obviously, very organized, which I'm not going to do. But for our one-year anniversary show, going to be sometime this December, we're going to record it right here in Prescott in front of a live audience. We are asking folks, I put it out on Facebook, I don't know if you saw it, but I'm going to extend this invitation to you personally right now because I'd love to have you partake in this. The most interesting person you've ever met. That's the theme. It does not have to be humorous. Actually, we've gotten some good feedback through email. And a couple of these are definitely not humorous. They are very heart-wrenching. Some are just flippant. Some are. The one I'm going to be doing is just on this guy that I grew up with who was a real knucklehead. But he was an interesting guy. Five, six, seven, 8 minutes, at least 5 minutes, the stories have to be true. We're just looking for stories about people who have affected how you look at life. That could be for the better. It could be somebody's mentioning a elementary school teacher that really formed what they're doing today 50 years later. Some are talking about medical professionals that have helped them up. And some, like myself, are just kind of offhand, offbeat characters that we've come across in our life. So I'd love to have you partake in this. We're hoping to get 6 to 8 participants, storytellers.
Count me in.
But use that. I'm going to hold you to that. A 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 minute segment.
It's a handshake right here. Right here, breaking bones.
You talk to us. Just tell us a story. We're going to do it in front of a live audience. We're going to have refreshments handy.
Love refreshments.
Yeah. So I'll keep you posted on that. And you folks out there listening, follow me on Mile High Show on Facebook, milehighshow.com in that comments page there. Send us an email. Let us know about an interesting character. And we'd love to have the public participate in this. Again, don't have to be a humorous story, but just an interesting person. Tell us about that person. We'd love to hear that story. So we'll look forward to that. Adam, I'm going to cut you loose because I know you got a show to get ready for here.
And Adam, I need a cigarette.
Adam Harden on Facebook. I'll have a link to that. Thanks again, man. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, Mile High Show.
Baby, baby, oh yeah, baby, yeah.